A busy show to wrap up the week on Friday, February 18th, 2022 on Connecticut Today. We chatted with former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso about the current state school construction contracting controversy. University of New Haven National Security and International Law Professor Dr. Robert Sanders commented on the situation in Ukraine just before President Joe Biden delivered remarks from the White House on that Ukraine situation. But back to the matter at hand that's quickly become kind of the elephant in the room, if you'll excuse the term here. All the innuendo, kind of, oh, wows, about the state school construction contracting program. And joining us right now, get her thoughts on it, is Republican State Rep. Laura Devlin of Fairfield with a return visit. Laura, hi, it's Paul again. How are you?
Hi, Paul. I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I wanted to have you on, Laura, because I know the Republican caucus has said, hey, it's time to really look into this. We seem to get, Laura, a different revelation on this almost on a daily basis. We have municipal leaders now in Bristol and in Groton saying, you know, telling the Connecticut Mirror, hey, we were getting the screws turned on us to use certain contractors. What are your thoughts on all this?
So it is pretty incredible, Paul. And, you know, as if the games played by the administration and the tone deafness of the legislature around parent choice for school masks wasn't enough, these scandalous acts under criminal investigation by the FBI just will further shake the public's confidence in elected or appointed officials, leaders, to do the right thing. And it's not good for our state, and it's not what the people of our state want, which is transparency and competency in their state government.
And, you know, Laura, there I understand, because I saw the Zoom public hearing the other day with a gentleman who heads this state contracting oversight board, Laura, and I see now where there's a budget adjustment proposal that would, and correct me if I'm wrong, would eliminate a contracting oversight board which looks into this. I guess, Laura, with the excuse that, well, the state auditors can handle that, what's up with that?
So the proposal basically does render the state's contracting standards board totally ineffective. And while our auditors play a certain role, you may be aware that there are each year hundreds of recommendations made that are never acted upon. The auditors have no authority for implementation. And it's interesting because if you go back to, and it's before my time, but the scandals around Governor Rowland, that's when the State Contracting Standards Board was put in place, and Democrats were all over it. So it's astounding to me that everybody's just sort of looking down and saying, I didn't know, oh, I wasn't, you know, under my watch. And why not in unison, Democrats and Republicans are saying, we need an independent review now.
So, Laura, the question that folks might ask right now listening to us at 3:11 on a Friday, February 18th, they may say to you, well, Representative, who's watching the store on this stuff? Because we have all this finger pointing now. You know, well, this town is saying this and this city is saying this, and all these websites are putting up all these letters that were, you know, sent in protest and in warning of certain things. Yet, Laura, somebody had to say, tell that school district or that school board or that city or town, see if you can get them to go with our preferred contractor. I mean, that's what I'm wondering here. And I was talking about in the first hour, who was saying that?
So it sounds like the individual in charge of school construction was saying that. It also sounds like there were plenty of other people in high-ranking positions in the administration that knew about this. And what's really disturbing, and you know, my leader Vin Candelora pointed this out at our press conference this week, is that, you know, since Governor Lamont took office in January of 2019, there's just been a ongoing diminishing of transparency in the executive branch, and that is the opposite of what we need and what the people of our state expect. There's got to be a reset and a change there.
And this is the kind of thing, Lauren, by the way, the guest is State Rep. Laura Devlin of Fairfield. Laura, this is the kind of thing where the common person, maybe in both parties, sitting at a bar watching television, goes, see, See, there's always corruption. They all talk a good game, and this stuff always happens. It's all about the money. That's not good. I really find that, you know, when this stuff happens, can you blame people sometimes for how they think?
No, and it's astounding as well that sort of that's the attitude in Connecticut, right? Like, oh, it's just that again. I mean, look at the state pier, a project that is over budget, behind schedule, and also under FBI investigation. It's really amazing. And the people of our state, just like parents stood up regarding mask choice, should not tolerate this. They should demand transparency and accountability and competency in their elected officials and those that are appointed, the appointed leaders as well.
So what happens now, Laura? I played portions of the video the other day with yourself and the members of the caucus there and Vin Candelora taking questions. I thought Vin was very definitive about this, about what should happen. Will you be getting, you'd think, cooperation from your friends on the other side of the aisle?
So as far as I know at this point, there hasn't been a lot of action in that regard. So the swiftness with which the majority had acted in the past, if, you know, other situations, like I mentioned with Governor Rowland, just doesn't seem to be happening at this point. And, you know, every single project, school construction project, should be reviewed. And it shouldn't just be a criminal investigation, but we need a legislative one, too. And, you know, to build trust in the people of our state, you know, a great sign of that would be a bipartisan approach to really taking this seriously and taking some quick action to look into it. And I don't understand how you could justify doing anything other than that.
And, you know, Laura, finally, I don't care what party anybody's in. I had an old boss in radio. We're still friends, and maybe you had this in your professional career, too. My old boss, when I worked for him, he would always say, Paulie, when we lose our credibility, when people don't think we're credible, everything else goes out the window. And sadly, Laura, you know, this might be a situation there, too, like that I hope can be avoided.
You know what, Paul, and further, this would never be tolerated in the private sector. So why do we tolerate it in our government?
Good question. State Rep. Laura Devlin, Fairfield. Laura, good to speak with you, and we will talk with you down the road. Thanks, and have a great weekend. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, thanks. There you go. State Rep. Laura Devlin of Fairfield. So we'll see what happens, folks. You know, there are two parties in Hartford. Let's see if they can come together. And Laura is right, and Vin Candelora was right the other day. You remember what happened in the Rowland years, and it wasn't nice, and it was ugly, and he was bounced, and all these safeguards were put in. And, you know, are the safeguards? Ask yourself this, and this shouldn't matter what party you're in. If Republicans are doing it, they should get bounced, or doing it, or doing anything untawdry. Nothing has been proven yet. It is a lot of innuendo. We don't make judgments on what looks bad or looks weird. It has to all be, you know, it has to all be proven. But either party, the people should stand, you know, they should just say, no, 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 this is not. Now, again, from a party point of view, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, from a party point of view, you know what they're asking themselves? And you know this happens. This is not anything that is a big revelation from me or the guy next door or any other talk host. Both sides are probably asking themselves, well, is this going to cost us votes? Is the common person, the person that automatically, in this case, pulls a Democratic lever every 2 years or 4 years, are they even going to be cognizant of all that? And even if they are, do they say, well, yeah, there's, you know, I don't like when these shenanigans happen in politics, when my team does it, my party, but yeah, it's not enough for me to change my vote. That's what it comes down to. People can call and scream and yell about everything, and I can talk about it here, and we can talk about it with all the politicos you want. But if people look at it and say, "Eh, it's how the game is played," so what? The state wanted them to use this other contractor. It was $250,000 more. But if it supports union jobs, it's all right with me. That's how people think. Chris Caruso joins us, as he's wanting to do, from his palatial office. And Chris, his palatial office on 95 or on the Parkway. And Chris, I have a feeling that you want to chime in on, well, this situation, Chris, where, I mean, we're getting kind of dribs and drabs here, Chris, this kind of twists and turns here every day on this contracting thing. What do you think?
Well, you know, Paul, when I was a legislator and I headed up the Government Administration Elections Committee, the State Contracting Standards Board was my legislation. And it was created out of the corruption of John Rowland and mm-hmm. some legislators that were caught in corrupt acts. And it was set up primarily to have oversight over the contracting system. If you recall, that's what got John Rowland in trouble. It was state contractors doing business with the state that were doing favors for him at his home, doing different work at his home at no charge.
Yeah.
So one of the procedures for this is any contractor has to register with the state. There's a background check on all the principals of that company to make sure they haven't been involved in some type of criminal activity or what have you. And then there's a panel that reviews these contracts, and there's a cost analysis that's required for these contracts to make sure the taxpayers are getting the best deal possible. There was an investigative staff that would go in and actually look at these contracts, and if there was any wrongdoing, they could report that to the Attorney General's office or the Chief State's Attorney. All of those were in there, but unfortunately, little by little, what we've seen happen is the school construction was pulled out of a jurisdiction of that legislation. We've seen it with UConn, for example. Their contracts don't go through the standards board. And slowly but surely, governors, legislatures are slowly dismantling this body. You know, I know there's a proposal for an inspector general. That's not needed. This body had investigatory powers. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, what's troubling to me is I read in the paper where the governor is proposing that the ability for this body to suspend a contract based on violations, mm-hmm. he wants to take that power away from them.
Now, Chris, why would he? Now, Chris, why would he do that? What could conceivably? In fact, we had Mr. Fox on the show yesterday. I played a snippet of who heads that board right now. There was a Zoom public hearing yesterday, and I played about a minute where he says they don't want us investigating anything. Chris, why would they do that?
Well, it's because the Constitution gives a tremendous amount of power to the governor and the executive branch. And don't forget, every agency is involved in some type of contracting, whether it's Department of Children and Families or the Department of Labor or the Department of Economic Development. Every agency is involved in contracting. And no governor wants to give up that oversight. And so even when we were enacting that legislation back, I believe it was 2004, 2005, I was met with a thunderstorm, a lightning storm, all put together, a tornado. It was one of the hardest pieces of legislation to get passed. So, you know, as time goes on, they slowly bastardize the legislation, pulling parts from it to, you know, have the governor regain that authority, which is a mistake. Any power vested in one branch of the government is dangerous. And I'm not saying the governor is doing anything wrong. I wouldn't accuse him of that. But there are commissioners and others that do business with the state that, frankly, may do violations and may be corrupt. And that's the reason why you want to have this standard. We even, for example, within our code of ethics, that an individual, a state employee in an agency mm-hmm. who oversees contracts cannot in any way accept any favor or gratuity from a contractor who's applying to have legal business with the state of Connecticut. So the laws are there. We don't need to create an inspector general. What we need to do is properly fund the state contracting board,
yes.
Provide the investigators to them. They already have the power to stop contracts and to expose corruption. That's what we need to do. But it's very disheartening when I read the governor wants to take out the teeth of the legislation, mm-hmm. which is the ability for this board to suspend contracts in the wake of violation or corrupt acts. If you take that away from them, they have no authority. And that's the problem. And I'm hoping and praying that the legislature, stops that from happening. Since Roland has come out, we haven't seen the level of corruption that we did back in those days. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just blaming Roland. There was corruption with Democrats too. Corruption has no ownership in the Republican or Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. It's people who want to do greed and dishonest things are the ones who are corrupt, regardless of their party affiliation. But strengthen this review standards board. You know, they do, for example, cost analysis. At one time, Paul, you recall, we were hiring consultants that were doing work for the state, millions of dollars that was abused, wasted.
Sure.
The results weren't there. And that's part of having this contracting standards board. That's exactly, in addition to the Roland scandals, this was the reason we did it. And it's strong. Believe me, it's one of the strongest in the nation.
Yeah,
it will weed out corruption.
Yeah, and Chris, I just don't get why they would want to get rid of it. Chris Caruso, as always, great to hear from you. Have a happy weekend, sir. We'll be in touch. Thank you. Coming up top of the hour, scheduled at 4, President Biden talks about what is going on with the situation, Russia v. Ukraine, with the U.S. in the middle of it. Joining us right now to talk about that is Chair of the National Security Studies at the Henry Lee C. College of Criminal Justice and Forensic Sciences at the University of New Haven. He's a retired captain in the JAG Corps, a legal and national security educator, a former federal government organization in private industry, military communications, and weapons systems engineer. Again, another guest whose resume and business card are far better than mine. We welcome Dr. Robert Sanders from UNH to the program. Dr. Sanders, it's Paul here at WICC. How are you?
Glad to be with you. I'm doing just fine.
Well, thank you for joining us, Dr. Sanders. Well, as you eyeball this situation that seems to be getting more tense with Russia and Ukraine and Europe and NATO and the U.S. in the middle of this, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, you're right. It is getting more tense. We're getting down to the point where Russian forces now have the capability to move at any time. And as they've gained those capabilities, we saw what happened yesterday. So yesterday it was an increase in the violence in the contested areas in the south. The NATO and others have determined that type of activity now it has increased in terms of cross-border, cross lines of demarcation fighting, in terms of shelling and actual lower use of weapon combat type activities. The Russians say they're pulling back from other fronts. NATO and the U.S. intelligence areas say they're not. And what I found very interesting was that the United States and Britain, among others, have been very willing to share intelligence that say what the Russians are doing versus what the Russians say they're doing.
Yeah, Dr. Sanders, I found that interesting. In fact, somebody at the station, we were chatting about this the other day, and somebody asked me, they said, wow, you know, we're basically saying stuff that maybe in past years we would never do, kind of trying to tell the world, hey, don't believe this, because this is what Putin is doing. That is an interesting and, I think, kind of a refreshing approach here.
Well, we learned a lesson. So during the Obama administration, when the Russians moved in and annexed Ukraine and took it from Crimea from Ukraine, we went back and forth about what we should tell about what we knew. And ultimately, we kept our mouth shut, and the rest of the world did not hear what we knew. And by the time they did, it was too late for everyone to gather together and have a unified front and say, no, you won't do this. It was a fait accompli. And now it was looking at each other going, oh, wow, this is a horrible thing that happened. And we knew it was on its way. And we didn't tell everybody so that they could all engage and present a unified front, which is what's going on right now.
Dr. Robert Sanders, Doctor, hang on for just a moment. We'll be right back with you. More on this fascinating situation in Ukraine. What will happen? How much of this is maybe showboating by Mr. Putin? Is he actually going to go through with this or not? More from Dr. Robert Sanders from the University of New Haven. Straight ahead, though, first, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And we continue with Dr. Robert Sanders, Chief of National Security at the Henry C. Lee College of Criminal Justice at the University of New Haven, talking about will he or won't he Vladimir Putin and Ukraine. Dr. Sanders, will he or won't he? What do you think?
It's really down to what are the benefits versus the costs. And the benefits of him acting are to reassert what was once the Soviet Union, which Ukraine was then a part of, and its power in the arena, which butts up against NATO on the other side of Ukraine. What he will lose if the United States and the allies hang together and go forward what President Biden has said to do, and to heavily economically sanction this, the Russian government and the individual oligarchs that are the things, the people that help keep Putin in power.
Yeah.
He'll lose a lot. He'll lose a lot there. And, you know, this is all, this is power and money, and power over the land, power over the resources, power over the people.
Does he then, Dr. Sanders, respond, if he does this to any degree and we sanction him, does he say, well, okay, I turn off the natural gas and crude oil spigots to parts of Europe? Does he do that?
He does to the extent that he can afford to. Remember, you know, their economy is not the best in the world, and it has an oil-driven basis. So, oil and natural gas. So if you turn off the thing that brings you money in order to spite your nose to punish your face, is that where he's going? So he has a limit in the ability to do that. And it's a matter of how much pain can Europe accept to do the right thing for Ukraine, and how much pain will Europe accept to do the right thing? Now flip it around and ask the same question of Putin and Russia. How much pain can Russia accept to gain the end state of control of the people, land, and resources in Ukraine that he doesn't have today?
I've seen interviews over the years with Vladimir Putin, and one thing that he does not shy away from saying, Dr. Sanders, is that in some way he yearns for, if not the old Soviet Union, but Mother Russia, back when it was the U.S. and Russia, and China was not a factor. Now it's kind of the U.S. and China with their economic might, and Russia's just over there. How much of this do you think bears into that?
It's a central function in Vladimir Putin's life. He's old KGB. He remembers when Russia had a foot hold all across the earth, when Russia, as the Soviet Union, could threaten through proxies and surrogates all of NATO and the United States proper through Cuba. That's all gone. He's lost all of that, and it's likely never to come back at that level. But how much of it can he reconstruct and bring back? Is really his goal here. Can he gain a portion of what had existed for his own benefit and the benefit of his oligarchical friends?
I have read, Dr. Sanders, and experts like you have told me that he doesn't, if he wants to. He may not have enough troops at the border to completely take over Ukraine, but he doesn't have to. He could march into Kiev and install a puppet government there, you know, quote unquote, you know, as he would say, saving the Ukraine people from the rabble rousers or something like that. Could you see that happening?
Well, so there's two points to this. So what does he really want? He wants Ukraine to be back the way it was. After 2014, Ukraine's not going back the way it was. The people leaned from a Russian life that was what the East Germans leaned away from when the wall fell and they could go to West Germany and go, oh, my God, look how these people live. Well, guess what? Ukraine started to do that. They had advanced quite a bit, but even more after 2014, their own revolution, where they tossed out the Russian-supported leader to move to the West and to move into a different era. And now they have these freedoms they have these opportunities, they have these resources that are no longer government controlled, but they're individually controlled in more of a capitalist type of environment. Those people don't want to go back to that. So, yes, he could move in and take these things. He could probably install a puppet. But does he want the insurgency that's going to come from that? Because those Ukrainians who I heard yesterday, it was a 78-year-old grandmother learning how to shoot an AK-47.
Mm.
So those people, her kids, her grandchildren, what are they willing to do? I think they're fairly willing to say, we tossed your dude out in 2014. We didn't want what he represented or what you represent then. We don't want it now either. So if you can do what you think you can do with your military might, there's other things that can meet it in different ways. And he had one of those scenarios in Chechnya, mm-hmm. and he had one in Afghanistan, and he didn't like either one of them, and he lost them both.
And finally, the scary thing is all the experts are saying that even a limited incursion that's not full pedal to the metal could result in thousands of deaths.
Well, anytime you do kinetic, kill people and break things, you kill people and you break things. Mm. So the damage to Ukrainian infrastructure, other than the damage that's already been inflicted in the southern areas through the Little Green Men, and the fight that went on there and the fight to take Crimea will be extended across other parts of Ukraine, causing damage to and lives lost. Anytime you do that, the euphemistic term they call collateral damage, well, collateral damage is dead people and broken infrastructure. Always a bad thing.
National security expert Dr. Robert Sanders from the University of New Haven. Dr. Sanders, thank you so much. We appreciate the time. Have a good weekend, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you.
You're welcome, Paul. You have a good one.
Thank you. Dr. Robert Sanders, Chair, National Security at the Henry C. Lee College of Criminal Justice and Forensic Sciences at UNH, a retired captain in the Navy JAG Corps, former Federal Government Organization Counsel in Private Industry, Military Communications, and Weapons Systems Engineer.
As I've been making for some months now, two vital calls that on the situation in Russia and Ukraine. The first was to a bipartisan group of members of Congress who are currently representing the United States, along with Vice President Harris at the Munich Security Conference. The second was the latest in a series of calls over the past many months with the heads of state of our NATO allies and the European Union to bring them up to date on what the United States thinks is the current state of affairs and what's likely to happen in Ukraine in the coming days, to ensure that we continue to remain in lockstep, that is, the European Union and NATO. Despite Russia's efforts to divide us at home and abroad, I can affirm that has not happened. The overwhelming message of both calls was one of unity, determination, and resolve. I shared with all of those on the calls what we know about a rapidly escalating crisis in Ukraine. Over the last few days, we've seen reports of a major uptick in violations of the ceasefire by Russian-backed fighters attempting to provoke Ukraine in the Donbas. For example, a shelling of a Ukrainian kindergarten yesterday, which Russia has falsely asserted was carried out by Ukraine. And we also continue to see more and more disinformation being pushed out to the Russian public, including Russian-backed separatists, claiming that Ukraine is planning to launch a massive offensive attack in the Donbas. Well, look, there is simply no evidence of these assertions, and it defies basic logic to believe the Ukrainians would choose this moment, with well over 150,000 troops arrayed on its borders, to escalate a year-long conflict. Russia's state media also continues to make phony allegations of a genocide taking place in the Donbas, and push fabricated claims warning about Ukraine's attack on Russia without any evidence. That's just what I'm sure Ukraine's thinking of doing, attacking Russia. All of these are consistent with the playbook the Russians have used before. to set up a false justification to act against Ukraine. This is also in line with the pretext scenarios that the United States and our allies and partners have been warning about for weeks. Throughout these tense moments, the Ukrainian forces have shown great judgment and, I might add, restraint. They refuse to allow the Russians to bait them into war. But the fact remains, Russian troops currently have Ukraine surrounded from Belarus along the Russian border and with Ukraine to the Black Sea in the south and all of its border. You know, look, we have reason to believe the Russian forces are planning to and intend to attack Ukraine in the coming week, in the coming days. We believe that they will target Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, a city of 2.8 million innocent people. We're calling out Russia's plans loudly and repeatedly, not because we want a conflict, but because we're doing everything in our power to remove any reason the Russia may give to justify invading Ukraine and prevent them from moving. Make no mistake, if Russia pursues its plans, it will be responsible for a catastrophic and needless war of choice. The United States and our allies are prepared to defend every inch of NATO territory from any threat to our collective security as well. We also will not send troops in to fight in Ukraine, but we will continue to support the Ukrainian people. This past year, the United States has provided a record amount of security assistance to Ukraine to bolster its defensive, $650 million from Javelin missiles to ammunition. We also previously provided $500 million in Ukraine and humanitarian aid and economic support for Ukraine. And earlier this week, we also announced an additional sovereign loan guarantee of up to $1 billion to strengthen Ukraine's economic resilience. But the bottom line is this: the United States and our allies and partners will support the Ukrainian people. We will hold Russia accountable for its actions. The West is united and resolved. We're ready to impose severe sanctions on Russia if it further invades Ukraine. But I say again, Russia can still choose diplomacy. It is not too late to de-escalate and return to the negotiating table. Last night, Russia agreed that Secretary of State Blinken and Foreign Minister Lavrov should meet on February 24th in Europe. But if Russia takes military action before that date, we'll be clear that they have slammed the door shut on diplomacy. They will have chosen war, and they will pay a steep price for doing so, not only from the sanctions that we and our allies will impose on Russia, but the moral outrage the rest of the world will visit upon them. You know, there are many issues that divide our nation and our world, but standing up to Russian aggression is not one of them. The American people are united. Europe is united. The transatlantic community is united. Our political parties in this country are united. The entire free world is united. Russia has a choice between war and all the suffering it will bring, or diplomacy that will make a future safer for everyone. Now, I'm happy to take a few questions. Nancy from Bloomberg.
Thank you so much, sir. Do you think that it is wise for President Zelensky to leave Ukraine if an invasion is as imminent as the U.S. says it is?
That's a judgment for him to make and a determination as to whether or not. I've spoken with Zelensky a dozen times, maybe more, I don't know. And it's in the pursuit of a diplomatic solution, it may not be maybe the wise choice. But it's his decision.
And do you have any indication about whether President Putin has made a decision on whether to invade? Do you feel confident that he hasn't made that decision already?
As of this moment, I'm convinced he's made the decision. We have reason to believe that.
There seems to be a unanimity of spirit to do between the United States and Europe to do some sanctions, comprehensive sanctions. But is everyone on board with the exact same sanctions that you want to do?
Yes. There'll be some slight differences, but none. There'll be more add-ons than subtractions.
And President Putin is going to oversee some nuclear drills this weekend. How do you see that happening? What's your reaction to that, sir? Thank you.
Well, I don't think he is remotely contemplating nuclear using nuclear weapons. But I do think it's, I think he is focused on trying to convince the world that he has the ability to change the dynamics in Europe in a way that he cannot. But I don't, how much of it is a cover for just saying we're just doing exercises, and there's more than that, I just can't. It's hard to read his mind.
You are convinced that President Putin is going to invade Ukraine. Is that what you just said a few moments ago?
Yes, I did. Yes.
So is diplomacy off the table then?
No. Until he does, diplomacy is always a possibility.
What reason do you have to believe he's considering that option at all?
We have a significant intelligence capability. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.